Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, engineering and producing our program. Picture perfect weather, Tom, for the weekend. I don't see any of those, you know, I hate those gusty winds that bring all the dust and stuff, but it looks pretty good.
We're going to get a little bit of some breezes, probably tomorrow.
Yeah, as long
as it's... maybe into Sunday.
As long as it's under 20 miles an hour.
None of that. No, okay. These are more in the light breeze
there
category.
All right. Off and running on the Buckmaster Show, our Friday edition. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, and the radio station KVOI now is part of the growing Bustos Media presence here in town. Five radio stations under one roof. This one is KVOI 1030 The Voice, Tucson's only source for live local news and talk. We're in our 14th year with the radio show, and my 36th year in Tucson media. We have our worldwide live listening podcasts and our show archive at buckmastershow.com. And for our telephone interviews, and the live line is open, 790-2040. If folks want to join in the conversation, that is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. A couple of quick media shout-outs. Thanks to our partnership with Dylan Smith at TucsonSentinel.com and with Dan Shear at Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. My guest co-host today from the media is my friend Tim Steller, the 2022 Arizona Newspaper Association of the Year Columnist of the Year. And so, Tim, we need to get that upgraded. When is the competition coming up, I hope?
Remind me when the Pulitzers are judged.
So I
know I must be a finalist.
You
or
must
at least
be
a semifinalist.
Anyway, great
time
to have you here, Tim. And folks are going to hear you actually anchoring this program a couple of times when I take a little time off in May. We welcome back to the show the Tucson Police Chief Chad Kazmar. Chief, how are you?
Good, Bill. How are you doing? And Tim, you have my vote, buddy.
Oh, thank you.
Chief, it's always good to see you. What a horrible couple of weeks though with Officer Buckner, the ninth Tucson police officer to die in the line of duty in a real long history of men and women in blue in this community. Such a difficult situation for you, wasn't it, Chief? And the whole department.
Yeah, it really has been. It's been a challenging year, and to lose an officer on Easter Sunday made it even more difficult. And it's something that a lot of our staff hadn't experienced, and it's going to be a tough road ahead for all of us. I think the community, in our community, and also the New Orleans community, was also suffering with us. So the outpouring of support from Tucson, from Arizona, from across the country, from New Orleans has just been spectacular. And I'm glad to see that for my team members and of course for Adam's family.
He was driving a 17-year-old Crown Vic, and there are quite a few, dozens of these cars. You know exactly how many there are. You brought in a couple of photos. The impact, if it had been one of the newer vehicles that the officers drive in, there would have been a difference.
You know, so vehicles are a challenge. I think any of us who have purchased a vehicle in the last few years, or you drive by a vehicle lot, you notice a post COVID environment, vehicle sales has just changed. So what I'll tell you is Crown Victorias, which they stopped making in 2012, represent about 17% of my fleet. We've had over 100 Crown, or we have right around 100 Crown Victorias in our patrol fleet. We've had over 100 marked SUVs on order, pursuit SUVs on order through Ford. It's just been a challenge for over 2 years, and it's just
really
been a challenge to get those.
Years.
So we're not unique in Tucson. This is an issue that Arizona Chiefs of Police Association and Major City Chiefs has been working on with the three major manufacturers, both Ford, Chevrolet, and Dodge, to say, hey, you know, we need you to prioritize government vehicles, specifically public safety vehicles, first, because we don't know. I wish I could sit here and tell you if Adam was in an SUV, it would have definitively saved his life. what I can definitively tell you is, as a chief, and I think the city leadership feels the same way, we want to make sure that we're giving our staff the best equipment possible, so when and if they get into a collision like this, that they have the best opportunity to walk away. And as we know, a 2007 vehicle that only has dash and steering wheel column airbags versus a new vehicle that has accident avoidance, it has side curtain airbags, it has a different structural, the way the vehicles collapse in a collision. They're just, you know, the stuff that we're using today is inferior to that. So,
and we upgraded all of our equipment through that initiative that the voters said, we want better vehicles for the cops.
So Prop 101 is still delivering, and although that's been not funding public safety since it's evolved in its evolution and under city leadership and voter direction, but we are an expensive machine. For example, $78,000 is what it cost us to equip a police officer for their gear in their patrol vehicle, and it's you know, just under $70,000 for a community service officer. So when we start looking at these things, we have to recognize 101 was a lifeline, but as we continue to evaluate a sales tax for our community and how that could impact public safety, we have real needs. And I run about a $25 million deficit a year of basic needs. And so one thing I've been working on with city leadership, and we continue to gain momentum every year, but it's not resolved, is making sure that we have a general fund fleet that allows us to maintain my goal would be a 20% fleet replacement plan. So we just don't get in a position with a pandemic or with a shortage or a recall that we're in a bad spot because we don't have an appropriate fleet.
Here's Tim Stellar.
I just want to clarify what you're saying there. Are you saying that if those SUVs that are on order had been delivered earlier, that theoretically or hypothetically, that Crown Victoria that Officer Buckner was driving and others would probably have been replaced or moved out of the fleet?
Yeah, absolutely. So my goal, I'm a legacy guy. So when I first came on, I was driving Chevy Caprices, and I was one of the few officers who wanted to drive those because they were the Crown Victoria of my day when I was a new officer. And I loved the heritage of driving a vehicle I knew one day we would no longer drive. And I don't think Adam's wife would mind if I told you, he loved driving a Crown Victoria and he chose to drive that vehicle. Mm-hmm. In fact, and I was just discussing with her earlier today, my strategy with city leadership on how to make sure that we're getting these replaced. And in her response, and so we had a conversation about that. We don't know for sure, but again, I have a responsibility as chief of police, and I took ownership even, with my team and with the family of, in recognizing that I have a responsibility to make sure that my staff is equipped with the very best equipment possible. But it's a challenge, and I'll tell you, a patrol vehicle in 2018, fully outfitted, was $55,000. In today's market, it's an increase of 40% at just under $80,000 to put a fully marked patrol vehicle out on the street. And those costs are reoccurring.
Tim, I have one quick about the cars. I wonder if electric vehicles, is that going to be something you think might be holding up Ford?
No. So Ford, what happened with our pending orders is Ford came out, and we run about 46% of the city's overall fleet, and under mayor and council leadership and commitment to our environment, we either purchase hybrids or moving towards full electric vehicles in a non-pursuit package. What Ford did is they came out this year and said, hey, this happened about 90 days ago. We want to get everybody caught up on orders, but they're going to have to be all gas. They won't be producing the hybrid for government pursuit rated vehicles. In 23 and 24 and possibly into 25.
Okay, Tim.
Where are you at on the investigation of the collision that killed Officer Buckner?
So some things will come into play next week as far as our criminal investigator's presentation to city attorney's office and how we decide to move forward. And then, of course, there's an administrative review that will take place within the department that will take about 2 months to complete.
Mm-hmm. So if you're talking about the city attorney's office, that would be referring to possible misdemeanors as opposed to felonies, which would be the Pima County Attorney's Office, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So what we're just reading between the lines here, then what you're saying is right now you're investigating it for possible misdemeanor or civil misdemeanor charges or civil citations against the driver.
Yeah, the timeliness of this is never works out perfect, but we just met with the family to discuss that before I'm coming here to meet with you, and I haven't had an opportunity to discuss it with my staff, so I'm not in a real position to talk about that with the broader Tucson community at this moment. But what I can tell you, Tim, is we evaluate, you know, we will exhaust any potential, the appropriate potential to hold the individual accountable that contributed to the collision and made the left turn in front of Officer Buckner, who was appropriately driving lights and siren to an emergency event at appropriate speeds, in my opinion, as chief. And so, you know, there's nuances, which you're far more educated than the average person who pays attention to what happens and goes on with the police department. But there's underlying, when we have a traffic collision, you notice I didn't use the word accident, because most accidents are actually preventable if people were paying attention and not distracted with phones and not making left turns in front of people. And that is an action that kills people in our community throughout the year. Left turns, whether they're leading left arrow or brinking arrow. And, you know, I'll use this moment to tell everybody, keep your phone, you know, which phone was not in play here, I will tell you, but that's the number one distraction in collision. So keep your phone out of your hand while you're driving. Pay attention to what you're doing and be aware of your surroundings. And don't be in a rush. You know, the irony of people trying to rush to get across town is they rarely get anywhere that much quicker, right?
Tucson continues to be a really, really dangerous place for pedestrians and bicyclists. The numbers are higher than at this time a year ago.
Yes, we're still, that continues to be one of my primary focuses. We as chief and making sure that we're contributing to a safe environment for pedestrians and cyclists, motorcyclists, and folks walking and in vehicles. And we're at 35 fatalities year to date, which is five more than last year. We're up at 16 pedestrian fatalities from 11 this time last year. We're at 3 bicycle fatalities, where we were at 2 last year. We're at 7 motorcycles, which we were at 5 this time last year, and 9 vehicles, and we were at 12 of those last year.
Hmm. So is there any explanation for the increase?
You know, with 11,000 traffic stops year to date for our department, so kudos to the team who are out there, not only my traffic unit, but the patrol officers who are making those contacts. We're up 3% year to date for those contacts. We're up 31% in our traffic, actually 36% in our traffic contacts. Fentanyl plays a huge role in the pedestrian, I'll tell you right now. People high on fentanyl and walking out into the street and jaywalking and often at times, you know, within 100 feet of a hawk or 100 yards of a hawk device, which is a more robust way to a traffic safety device across the street. Again, you know, we have an unsheltered population that continues to contribute to a lot of areas in the community that we have to work on this year, and one of them is traffic safety.
Dark Skies Initiative, which we are one of the few cities in the country that has this program to keep the skies dark because of the astronomy component. Is it a factor?
I think it is a factor, and that's a conversation that I have with U of A leadership. It's a conversation we have in the city across many different departments and the community. And I don't think one can't come with the other. The lighting technology exists today. Dependent on the lumens of the light, the color of the light, and the direction and motion sensors. So there's a cost that are associated to all those things, but we certainly do need to increase lighting in high pedestrian used areas, and we're in the conversations having those. And that's where Prop 411 can come into play, and we do have some funds, but, you know, nothing happens super, you know, quick in a 250 square mile city as fast as we'd like.
So you're saying that the technology has increased adequately to allow for a pretty dark, that little effect on the observatories, but still lighting the streets?
In my conversations, and I'm no light expert, Tim, but yes, in my education in this space, I believe we can do both.
Mm-hmm. Tim, why don't we take the break right here and talk about my favorite bakery?
I'm really hungry.
Well, do you know about the enhancements?
Enhancements. That's a,
because this is something you'll need to be talking about when you're over here in this chair. The enhancements are the liquor license.
Oh yeah.
Yes. Mona's Steve and the team applied for a Pima County liquor license, and they were granted that, and they felt this would be a nice little enhancement. Some people would want a mimosa, a little champagne and orange juice with their breakfast. You could have a beer also now with your lunch. Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. What's on your mind, Tim, as far as bakery goods right now?
I would go for something savory. Yeah, I'm not ready for the sweet stuff.
Would you go for maybe some of the lunch and sandwiches?
Yeah, something like that.
A sandwich. Okay. All right, Chief, are you into bakery goods?
I'd go for the cheese Danish. Absolutely. I have a massive sweet tooth.
You would go for it. You're massive.
Yeah, and I would just like to note for our listeners today, and Tim and I sitting here, this is, I believe, the second time we're talking about such an amazing, delicious treats that could have been provided to us, and there's a visual representation.
One.
There's not one here in front of us.
That's too. That is
at lunchtime. I just want to say.
Well, we've booked you for July. I'm going to make sure there are some Mona's Danish something here for you. Boy, I'd really drop the ball on that one. We'll take a break right here. It's Buckmaster on a Friday. The chief of police is here. Be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our Friday Focus interview today. The Chief of Police is back with us, and we are so happy to have Chad Kazmar with us. And we're happy to have Tim Steller from the Arizona Daily Star with us. We mentioned New Orleans police earlier, and just to clarify, Officer Buckner had spent time with NOPD, didn't he, Chief?
Yeah, Adam started his career, Bill, in New Orleans PD, and actually spent more time there than he had with us. But we, you know, same. All of my staff are special, and I think anybody who chooses to take on the responsibility and become a public servant and take an oath to risk their life to save others is a special human being. But then there's extra special people that really touch individuals in a unique way, and Adam was certainly one of those. And I'm not just saying that. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that if he wasn't, but mm-hmm. I've gotten to know him more. I mean, with over 1,200 team members, I obviously don't get to intimately know all my employees when they first start, And I've heard just some really amazing stories and how he impacted Operations Division Midtown, the Training Academy. He was looking to get on the hostage team. He was actually number one on that list, which he didn't know at the time of his death. So he was a go-getter. He was a field trainer. He wanted to have an impact. He lived in the city limits of Tucson. I know that sometimes people think, well, if you don't live in Tucson, you don't care, which I do push back against. But he chose to live in the city of Tucson. He chose to serve here as a Tucson Police Department officer. And his wife made sure that we honored his memory by having his memorial service downtown and at the Fox Theater. And that's what made it so special.
Mm. Tim.
Yeah, I don't know to what extent you can talk about this, but there have been rumors circulating since this happened. I think it resulted from the way the scanner talked about, the people on the scanner talked about Officer Buckner's collision. There have been rumors that he wasn't wearing a seatbelt or that he was, because there was some sort of ejection that happened. I'm wondering if you can address that at all. Or if that's not something that you can talk about.
Yeah, what I would say is rarely as what you hear initially from the scanner groups is 100% accurate, which is the case here. Again, all those answers will come out in due time. There's a criminal investigation that happens, and then there's an administrative investigation to follow. And there's certainly a conversation that I get to have the opportunity to have with my internal staff first, so they're not finding information out in the media, which I owe them as chief as a responsibility. So if everybody's just a little patient with me, I think by, next show when we come back on, I'll be in a different position to talk about more of those details.
Let's talk about staffing. The community resource officers, that the ranks are growing, and this is a real success story. It's going to mean better consumer services for the citizens of the city of Tucson.
It really, yes, it's a focus in our expansion, which we've over tripled, those team members in the last 3 years. They're sitting at 155 community service officer team members that really can take a lot of different calls that don't require a gun and a badge. So we're excited about how we've been able to scale those team members. We have 31 of those 155 are in training as we speak. So you're going to continue to see those folks in the very near future. Again, they're also driving Crown Victoria's. One of the things that I don't want for these team members is to be so identifiable as a police officer. It's tough for, I think, community. They drive a police car. They're wearing a little bit different color uniform, but they don't have a gun, and they have different tools, and they have different responsibilities. So they're going to be driving Ford Mavericks, which is a four-door little small pickup truck. They'll have emergency equipment on those vehicles, so you'll still see them helping out with collisions, blocking traffic out in our parks. They're going to be coming to your homes to, if you have you're a victim of a property crime. They do community events. We've actually expanded their roles and responsibilities to the entire agency, along with our professional staff investigators. So, I'm really fortunate that we were able to scale both the professional staff investigators and CSOs, because we have the next two fiscal years for the city are going to be really difficult with some of the tax changes that are coming out of the Capitol. So I'm glad I have the staff that I have as we continue to focus on increasing commission. I'll likely be holding the professional staff numbers about where they're at here for the next two fiscal years.
How about team members overall? What's your staffing numbers?
We're just over 1,200. We have 1,203 team members. 808 of those are commissioned police officers. 27 of those 808 are in different various stages of training. I'm authorized at 882 sworn. So join TucsonPD.org. We still, word of mouth is still the best way to get the right people that apply for our police department, on top of our Grow Our Own program through our community service officers and our PSIs program. But we need help. I really need to increase the applicant pool that's putting in, and it's a tough job. I mean, that if you turn on the news, it's a scary, tough job. And when we lose an officer like this, I don't think there's a lot of families that are at home pushing their children to go do a profession. But the reality is, we give them amazing training and the resources to be successful. And, we thankfully, knock on wood, rarely lose police officers. And it's catastrophic when we do. So it's an honorable profession. I'd be honored if both of my sons chose to follow my footsteps. And hopefully some of our listeners will think about that as well.
What about over the long run, just trying to establish this pool that you're talking about, pool of possible candidates? How do you look past like the current emergency and see making police work more attractive to a group of young candidates, you know, people who may be kids now or teens, what have you?
So my goal hasn't changed. I want to see the department at a 900 commission number and a 300 split of both community service officers and professional staff investigators. And so the way that we do that, Tim, is connecting with our youth at a young age where they're still young enough to make their own opinion, independent mm-hmm. of what they maybe see on the media or maybe one bad encounter or experience. If they, you know, let's hypothetically say a police officer is called to a domestic violence situation, there's children in the room. That's a horrible way in representation that they might think about what the policing profession looks like. And so I think if we can have contact with our youth in the community and through the schools, and recognizing that we were across the country, the law enforcement profession, public safety was pulled out of schools. And so we've expanded that here. There's 17 different school districts in this area. We have we only have a handful of full-time officers through our student engagement efforts that we call SET. We're also using community service officers in schools too to connect with the youth. So we're really rethinking, you know, what we're not going to do is commit to our traditional hiring and efforts and the things that just have not been working. And we have to scale that. And we also have to rethink of the calls that we have these folks go to.
Mm, what do you mean by that?
Well, we have 760 deployable police officers. And so this is the first year in 5 years that we didn't start the year at a lower commission number. And so we have to evaluate what the workload is. You know, that's where our commitment to evidence-based strategies is so important. And through those, we're seeing the results. Crime is down in Tucson. Violent crime is down. Property crime is down. Our call response times are up. So it's one of those things as chief, I daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, I'm evaluating the resources that I have and how I use those and what kind of impact I'm making adjustments through the year.
Are you getting more resources to where the resources need to be now with this new kind of hotline for folks that want to report something that wouldn't necessarily need a response of a police officer?
Public Safety Communications Department, which is our emergency communications, aka 911, they're doing an amazing job. And 311 was born within their team, and they're doing an outstanding job of pulling off calls that don't require a police officer or a community service officer, or frankly, that we can take as a online report or get it to the right hands. That's our strategy of put the right work in the right hands. So that work is ongoing. We peel off over 1,000 calls a month where folks are in mental health crisis. And again, it's the appropriate response is not a firefighter or a police officer, but somebody in the mental health field that can go out, or there's a co-response. So we're continually reassessing as a public safety team and figuring out how to look at that and what that looks like. And so the focus for me will continue this year to be on violent gun crime, traffic safety, of course, our unsheltered population and the role that the police department plays on a really comprehensive problem and response. We're also focusing on our human trafficking issues that as a major city we're going to have, and we just haven't had committed staff like we did towards the end of last year to expand those efforts. So a lot going on in Tucson.
Violent crime is down a little bit?
Part one, violent crime is down 5.9% year to date, and we're still holding down nearly a 9% reduction over 5 years. So we always look at how are we doing year to date, but what does the 5-year average look like? Part one property crime bill, we're down over 16% year to date and down 18% on a 5-year average. We've had 1,200 narcotics arrests this year. That's up 3% year to date and 31% 5-year average. Again, arrest is part of a comprehensive solution, but not the only solution. We can talk more about that if you'd like. And again, over 11,000 traffic stops this year. Homicides, we're at 14 year to date, so that's down about 32%. And the last kind of violent crime number for Tucson here is we track number of bullet piercing incidents. So these are shootings that in the community that didn't result in a death, and we're down 12% for those. So again, those are evidence-based strategies in practice. And committed resources to focusing on and making sure Tucson's a safe place to live, work, and play.
Tim, did you have something now?
I'm sorry, yeah, I just wanted to clarify, 12% down 12% over what period? Yeah, last year to this year? Or
last year, that's a newer number, so mm-hmm. I don't have a five-year average. Mm-hmm. We just started tracking that. So yeah, we've had 45 of those incidents, 12% decrease. What I'll tell you, Tim, is we've rethought the way that we respond to shootings, where either there are shots fired and we find shell casings, which we now process, and we can track. We can track firearms. We can track shell casings. We track those just like we do individuals. We just notified the department this week that we're going to be dropping one patrol squad, and we're going to be expanding our community response team to a 2-team, 7-day-a-week coverage. This is all in an effort to, again, really focus on gun crime and violent crime and also street racing.
Hmm. What about the motorcycles? Are they being utilized, TPD officers on the motorcycles?
It doesn't sound like much, but we're also expanding. Yes, we've had about right around 20 motor officers that do the majority of our traffic enforcement. We're also increasing our DUI effort and our nighttime motor effort. They'll all be collectively working on street racing issues over the weekend. Traffic safety is going to require engineering. It's going to require ongoing community conversation at home with loved ones. If you have a young adult who's driving, especially if they're on your insurance, have the talk with them. You know, don't be distracted. Don't get involved in road rage. Don't get involved in any kind of street racing or intersection takeovers, because that will be a focus of ours this year.
Road rage was such a big deal during the pandemic. People were just so darn angry. Mm-hmm. Do we think we're seeing any decrease in that, or is it road rage is still somebody, I don't know, the flash of you know what, and then it's best just to get out of there.
We've seen a decrease, but yes, you're right. If anybody honks and, you know, tells you you're number one with one special finger, it's important to just ignore them, make a right turn, go home a different way, go to work a different way. Just don't engage with that individual.
Because next thing, they're reaching for the glove compartment, you know what they're going to pull out.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. There was a road rage killing, but I believe that was not in the TPD jurisdiction. That was recently, right? Yeah.
I think that one was in the county.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of that, the other day this week, there was an officer-involved shooting. That is a shooting by an officer who was off duty and in Pima County jurisdiction, I think in the foothills somewhere.
Yes, sir.
That was unusual. What was that about?
Well, what I can tell you, obviously, it's still under investigation, and University of Arizona will have primary lead on that through our Pima Regional Critical Incident Team. That is an expansion of this effort. And, you know, the idea, again, for first-time listeners, is that all 10 public safety law enforcement organizations, including the Sheriff's Department in this region, have collaborated through a regional approach to investigating critical incidents. And so in this case, U of A will take lead and the Pima County Sheriff's Department will take second. Really, the simple answer is we will investigate this just like an on-duty officer-involved shooting, because the individual was off-duty and taking police action.
No, but he happened to be like in an apartment complex and heard a problem going on and went to deal with it. Basically.
We are, my 1,200 team members are, and I'm included, are part of this community, and we only wear the uniform, you know, 40 to 80 hours a week, depending on what job you're working. And when we're off duty, most of us do tend to be armed, because, you know, we have a responsibility to protect the community, whether we're on or off duty. And so there'll be more to come on that, but that the information primarily will be released from U of A and Pima County Sheriff's, because it's their investigation.
And that critical incident team, you're real high on that. You think that's a really huge addition.
I am. I mean, there's no organization in this region who investigates more homicides and has more officer involved shootings than the Tucson Police Department. And we're getting those numbers down, and I couldn't be more proud of the team that are helping do that. But the reality is, with the legislative change a few years ago and seeing kind of where this was going, again, kudos to Sheriff Nanos and Chief Riley from Oral Valley. It was their brainchild to say, hey, let's get ahead of this. Let's do something special for Southern Arizona and larger metropolitan Tucson. And you're seeing that in play now 2 years later, where all investigative skills are rising in this region, because we're sharing. And I'll tell you what it looked like when it started to what I saw late Wednesday afternoon. It's really a special thing to see so many organizations working together. And it should be the model, I think, of all government, you know, in the state of Arizona and through our country, to see that this is possible and look at public safety's modeling it.
When you have people who are applying to be a police officer, I wonder how that has changed. There used to be tons of applications 20 years ago, and that now your pool has diminished significantly.
When I applied, Bill, in 2020, you know, 2019 into 2020, I competed with several thousand applicants for the job, and now we're lucky to process 300 to 400. You know, they'll find out more about that when they go to jointucsonpd.org. And it also takes more touch points for our organization now to keep people from ghosting us. If you're an employer, you know what that means. If it's not, it means you get somebody in an employment process, and the next thing you know, they stop answering your phone calls. So the newer generation just takes more contact, more interest, and a little more facilitating and encouragement. And the process is long, and we've streamlined it, but it's a 3 to 4 month process. It's sometimes 6 months, depending on the timing of when somebody applies, from the time they apply to the time that they start the academy.
What about cannabis use? Is that does that disqualify somebody, or since it's legal here, is it all right to have cannabis in your blood or your background?
Well, it's legal here, but it's still not legal federally, and so Arizona Post is who sets those guidelines is still being pretty conservative. So there is ongoing dialogue. I think there's a lot of chiefs. I support this as well to decrease the timeline and on how long that keeps you. It's not a permanent disqualifier, but and I think right now it's 2 years. So from the time that you've used marijuana, you have to wait 2 years before you can test. And I'd like to see that number probably go down to about a year.
Before you can test, and then you have to have a negative test for, in order, you talk about, when you say test, are you talking about a drug test, or are you talking about a test for the academy?
I think, you know, no. So for one, there's drug testing during the application process, and then there's random testing throughout our careers, where you can be randomly selected to go have that, your blood tested for a variety of things, and urine. And what I would tell you is, you know, we have to recognize that, you know, marijuana is not marijuana that everybody smoked 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. So the potency is much stronger. I think it's about 20% the THC levels. There's more and more studies that are being linked to schizophrenia and bipolar disorders. So it's I'm not being critical of Post, but I think we need to, dependent on the frequency of use and the last time of use, I think there's some room there that we could probably modernize that requirement.
Okay.
What about driving under the influence? It doesn't have to be just alcohol, does it?
No. And so, you know, that's part of the reason we've expanded our drug recognition efforts throughout the department. It can be much more complicated investigation, including a blood draw when somebody's under the being impacted by driving with, if they're using marijuana or other illicit drugs.
Any final thoughts, Chief, before we let you go? Anything you'd like to say?
I'd like to just say, you know, thank you to Tucson for being so supportive of us. You know, I feel very supportive of a chief from this community. I think people understand the complexities of the challenges that we face with the staffing levels that we have. And I couldn't be more proud of the team. And I think largely that's the way Tucson feels. But the way that everybody showed up and supported us the last few weeks through the loss of Officer Buckner is appreciated. I know the family appreciates it. I look forward to another exciting year ahead where we continue to solve some of our problems facing our community.
Okay, Chief, thank you very much. We'll look forward to your next visit with us.
Yes, I'll look forward to the refreshments.
Right. Yeah, I got to make sure there's
Mona's.
Get some Mona's here, definitely. And I know Tom on the other side of the glass would give me a big thumbs up. He'd love to have a piece of Kringle right now. All right, we'll take a break. I've got a few thoughts that I want to share with Tim right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our thanks to Chief Kazmar, the Chief of Police, City of Tucson, for his time as our Friday Focus interview. And it's always a pleasure to have Tim Steller with me in studio as we questioned the chief. And Sunday's paper in the Arizona Daily Star, Tim, you'll be looking at really the largest encampment of unsheltered people in town, right?
Yep. I've been spending time again at the 100-acre wood, which I wrote about a few months ago, and I wanted to revisit it because I've been noticing it growing and growing some more. And I know that in the offing, the ultimate demise of the camp is out there, but it's unclear exactly when it's going to happen.
Oh, so it's a spread out quite a bit, or what?
Well, what it is there's this big property. They refer it was named the 100-acre wood in 2019.
What's that about?
So that's from Winnie the Pooh, of course. There is a little woods in there. It's maybe an acre or two of the really wooded part. But it's a desert area where in 2019, I believe, the Sonoran Desert mountain biking group. Put in trails. And it's fun to ride. I rode it many times before it became a camp. And gradually over the last 4+ years, you know, it's come to be home for probably hundreds of people. Right now, I'd guess there's over 100 there. It's so big that there's kind of little neighborhoods, different sectors where different people hang out.
Split up into quarters and districts.
Just little camps.
Mm-hmm. But people were very friendly to you over there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, there's always a little suspicion if you walk in with a photographer like I did. And, you know, and I wear my press badge just so that nobody thinks that I'm trying to trick anybody or what have you. But generally speaking, people are pretty, if not friendly, at least tolerant. And they really talk up their home as a place where people get along for the most part, even if there is gunfire relatively regularly. I mean, it's a real...
Some of their challenges.
It's a really ambiguous situation because people really find a home there, but they also have a lot, you know, there's a lot of problems, including all the drugs that are sold and taken.
All right, you have written about the search now for the University of Arizona president. The search committee was named this week. I think there's about two dozen people. You've written about kind of the person that might be best for the University of Arizona right now. What would that person look
well,
like?
Well, I mean, that was just spitballing. But, you know, I mean, what I said was it's time to move away from the ambitious kind of president with a loose wallet, you know, the person with big dreams and just who doesn't care how they get there, you know, which would lend itself more to a technocrat or somebody who is a little more conservative. I don't mean conservative politically necessarily, but just conservative with how they spend money and view the role of the university, perhaps, you know, focusing on the central roles of the university. You know, this president, to his credit, tried to get a lot of people in from out of state and everything, but they ended up spending a ton of money on financial aid to attract those people, and that was one of the big reasons for the deficit that they developed.
They have cut the deficit a little bit. I think it's down to maybe $50-60 million.
Yeah. The news this week was that I think it's they project it for next year to be $52 million, which is a huge reduction in the size of the deficit. It was earlier this year $177 million. So, I mean, you know, they've cut administration by $30 million, according to John Arnold, the interim chief financial officer. Health sciences budget has been cut by $10 million, 6%, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, it hurts in some areas for sure. I also think that we have to acknowledge that the U of A has been a pretty flabby place lately and off and on down through the years, where especially on the administrative level, but
a little top heavy.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's an easy place to not an easy place to get a job, but a place where a lot of people get jobs.
Oh yeah,
maybe more than they need to have.
Anyway, Tim, we're out of time, but Tom had a good question, but for just a few seconds. What's the central role of a university, or at least this university, in your mind? Tim, and you've got about 10 seconds.
Yeah, it's
got
to be educating Arizonans. That's what the land-grant university is for. That's number one, and then you go down the list from there.
Not necessarily expansionist and going out like, let's build more big buildings and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that may be part of education. The problem is there's just not enough money coming in from the state to kind of – they have to start bringing in money from other places, and that means assuming different roles. So –
All right, Tim. Always a pleasure. We'll look for your work not only at the paper, but you're going to be filling in for me for a couple of shows in May. Thank you very
much. Looking forward to it.
All
right. Thank you, Bill.
Take a break right here. Weekend Watch, Dan Gibson standing by right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona.
all made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Weekend Watch with Dan Gibson, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, where the 10-degree promise is now in effect. We'll start talking about this as things warm up here in Tucson. About 10 degrees cooler over there because of that wonderful mile-high elevation. Silver City, only about a three-hour drive from Tucson. Great climate, lots to do, a lot of outdoor activities. Start your planning now by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. And again, it's only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Let's welcome now the host of Weekend Watch. Here he is, Dan Gibson. Dan, how was your week?
Oh, it was great. Yeah, really good time. Was over at the brand new, I mentioned the Moms last week, how they had just opened their new space. Went over there last night. They had an international music dance party outside. It was beautiful, nice and warm. What a great time to be in Tucson.
Yeah, it is a wonderful time after one of the best winters I can recall here, and now this early spring is delightful. What's going on this weekend if folks want to get out and about?
Well, if you're not going to the Agave Heritage Festival this weekend, it's happening tonight, tomorrow. It started actually last night, but tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. If you're not doing that, you better either be dead or in jail. And if you're in jail, you should just break out. You know what I mean? You got to get to the Agave Heritage Festival. It's a true celebration of all of the distillates of the agave plant here in Tucson, Arizona. An incredible opportunity. Let's just start with tonight. Tonight, there's a Tequila Ocho vintage tasting at Penca, which has their national agave spirit specialist taking people on a tour of pre-2020 Tequila Ocho vintages. You'll learn about the vision of the founders. That's at Penca tonight. Also Light Bites as well. They'll also be having a Mezcal Vago tasting there at Penca tonight. Some of my favorite things, the bar takeovers that happen over at Monsoon Room, which is at the former La Cocina space, 6 to 8 p.m. They are bringing a group in from Dallas, Texas, Los Almas Rotas. They will be serving a Texas barbecue-inspired menu, as well as a special menu of agave cocktails and tastings as well. I personally, I probably shouldn't say this so people don't stalk me or whatever, but nobody's doing that. But Barking Dog will be taking over the Tough Luck Club from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. They are coming all the way from Copenhagen, Denmark.
What?
So if they can come all the way from Copenhagen, Denmark, people can cross town. It is one of Scandinavia's best cocktail bars. They will be having a menu of delicious cocktails as well as Mezcal specials. And they will be curating their own playlist. Tomorrow night, things like the Agave Fiesta at Hotel Congress, a couple more takeovers, Bach Clavel at Barbada, Cumbia takeover at Owl's Club, and some Mezcal and chocolate tastings. All of this you can find at agaveheritagefestival.com. It is an incredible time. This festival has just expanded and expanded. It is really an incredible opportunity to taste some great mezcals, tequila, and more.
Wow. Sounds like a really fun event this weekend. What about something else that you would like to offer our listeners?
Well, I mean, you know, I think I sold that enough. But no, nonetheless, today at 6 to 9 p.m., Bond, which is an incredible shop over in the Five Points neighborhood, is celebrating their 20th anniversary, which is remarkable for any retail establishment. They will be having music by Naima Moore, snacks, drinks, and treats, and as well as a art show by Don Carney of Patch NYC. That is happening at 760 South Stone, and you can celebrate their anniversary with them.
All right, I could take one quick one.
Well, you know, Bill, I'm going to tell you, I was a little bit bummed out by yesterday's news that the Tucson Roadrunners are likely moving up to Tempe.
Yeah.
We should enjoy this while it lasts. There are games this weekend against the San Jose Barracuda happening both, I think, at 7 p.m. both nights.
Yeah.
Tickets are cheap. It's a heck of a time. We can all cry together. They'll also be playing in the playoffs coming up as well, so we should enjoy professional hockey while it lasts.
Playoff hockey, it's coming. Enjoy it while it lasts. Hey, Dan Gibson, have a great weekend. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, you too.
The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. My thanks to Tom Fairbanks, engineer and producer of our program, and the entire team at KVOI and Bustos Media Tucson that make us feel so comfortable on The Buckmaster Show. Hope everybody has a delightful weekend.